Thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of Nocturnal Emissions. I've been absent for a hot minute, but I am back again. So please enjoy the show and don't forget to comment, like, subscribe, follow me on Instagram, Nocturnal Emissions Show, follow me on Facebook. You can find all the links in the show notes. So please enjoy. Bye. Out there. It's I, Isabella L. Price, your humble host, back again for another episode of Nocturnal Emissions. I have to start off the top of the show by apologizing deeply, deeply, deeply. I'm so sorry for all 5 people who listen to this podcast. I am so sorry for being absent for so long. I was down with a mystery illness. Well, not a mystery illness. I know what it is. But I had an issue physically that put me down for a couple of weeks. And then I caught a cold. So you can probably still hear a little bit of the cold. And I'm still a little congested. And there might be moments that I just like stop talking so that I can cough my lungs out and then I come back again. I've been sick for too long. And even when I was sitting down to record this episode, I was like, wow, this feels brand new. This feels very unfamiliar. I can't believe that I'm back doing this because I feel like I don't know what I'm doing anymore. But I am back again with more content for your behind. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for being patient while I recover. I got some movie news. There's no guest on the deck for today's episode, but that's okay because it's just me. It's just you and me. How often do we get to have quality time together? Very rarely. And I feel like, you know, you're owed more quality time. Just you and me, darling. All right, so I've got some movies that I've seen over the past couple of weeks. Even though I was sick, I still saw some movies because, I don't know, I'm a professional. I don't know. Well, mostly it was because of the fact that I got a SIFF pass. It was SIFF these past few weeks. I think, how long is SIFF? Like 4 weeks or something crazy like that. And I got my first press pass, my first year's press. And I'm very proud of that. So I went to go see as many movies as I physically could, which wasn't actually a lot because I was sick. But I did get to go see, backing up, SIFF stands for the Seattle International Film Festival. It's a big schmeal here if you live in the Pacific Northwest. Seattle, the film festival here, I mean, like I said, it lasts 4 weeks. It's huge. There's all kind of panels and meet and greets and parties. Even though I feel like this year was less parties than years before, but I feel like years before there's just been like parties for the sake of parties. Like a beer company just wants to have a party and they'll just have a party. Anyway, this year, I don't know if it was just because I was physically checked out, it just felt it felt more low key this year than years before. Years before, I was a sponsor for the festival because I was a board member of the Women in Film chapter here, which is kind of boring information, but you know, just in case you wanted to know a little bit about me. This year was the first year that I was actually on the side of press, and that was exciting. It was exciting. Nobody knew who I was, but that's fine. I made some friends. I got to see some really cool films. One of the films that I got to see that I'm really excited for is Peter Strickland's In Fabric. This movie has been making the rounds in the festival season. So I went to go see every genre film. That was the only thing that I was like, I will go see every single genre film. So my standouts are Peter Strickland's In Fabric. If you, do you like movies? I feel like if you like films, you'll like this movie, I guess. It's a ride. Every year there's a movie that comes out where I'm just like, wow, that was a film. And this one is definitely one of them. One of the things that I've been noticing in the past couple of years is the resurgence of giallo films. And I don't really know exactly where to put that, like how to attribute that to, if that's because of the fact that a whole bunch of people that grew up watching giallo films are now adults who are now making their own giallo films. I really don't know if it's just like it fits within the aesthetics of the culture. This kind of we are definitely living in a culture where aesthetics matter so much, where it's like the collection of images, the collection of colors, sights, sounds, that whole thing matters just as much as the story. And giallo fits so well inside of that. Or if it's from, I don't know, a lack of ideas, I don't know. It doesn't feel that way. I saw In Fabric, which definitely has it's a giallo kind of like 80s BBC horror, Hammer horror kind of a feel to it. It's very aesthetic. It's very retro in this way that's very purposeful and meta, I guess I would say, or self-referential. It's a really interesting trend that's happening in horror, which is this sort of like, let's look back on the past and revisit the past and redo the past in a way that is in on itself. It's in on the joke, right? A director that does this so much and so well is Anna Biller. And you might know Anna Biller because she wrote and directed this film called The Love Witch, which came out, I want to say 2017, which is one of my favorite films. It's gorgeous and lush, and it's so 60s, well, 60s, 70s, psychedelic. It looks like it was filmed in the 70s, but it was definitely filmed in the modern era. But she captures the way that they filmed so well, like the tone of those films, the tempo of those films, the way that people talk, the dialogue, so, so, so well. And I'm seeing that again, because not only was I thinking about that for In Fabric, but there's another movie called Knife Plus Heart, which also premiered at SIFF. Can I say that it premiered at SIFF? It screened at SIFF. Premiere sounds like it has a lot behind it, but Knife Plus Heart, which was a ride, it's a queer giallo film about a woman who is the producer of a gay porn studio in Paris in the 70s, and her actors are dying, but she really doesn't really care about that much. Her actors are all being like killed by this serial killer, and she's like not as concerned with that as she is with the fact that her and her boo thing just broke up with each other, and she's way more concerned with getting her lover back than she is with the fact that everybody around her keeps getting stabbed to death. The movie is it's not dark, it's beautiful to look at, the aesthetics is perfect, it feels kind of hipstery in that way of like how popular the 70s aesthetic is right now in like home decor, fashion, things like that. If you go to, I don't know, I hate even saying this, but an Urban Outfitters, you will see a lot of 70s references. If you go to a place like Anthropology, you'll see a lot of 70s references. The 70s look and vibe is really popular right now in culture. So it's something that is also bleeding its way into media and films now, which I think is really interesting. Knife Plus Heart is completely giallo-inspired. Murder, serial killer, psychosexual, European, schlock kind of a film. It has a really amazing sense of humor. There are some parts of it that are just hilarious and had me dying. I'll write a longer review of this, of all of these movies, just that I can go more into doing research about them, but I really, really like those. Another movie that I really loved that is like a rare film, actually from the 70s or from the late 80s or early 80s. I think it's from the late 70s, early 80s, called The Stardust Brothers. This movie is like a lost classic, And I was talking to a friend of mine. It's a Japanese film. I believe it's from like 1980. I think that's the year that it was made. 1980 or 1981, something like that. It's a rock opera. Actually, I would call it like a pop rock opera. And it's wacky. If you've ever watched anime or read manga, it feels like a live action anime. It's the wackiest thing I have ever seen. It was so funny, so endearing, so cute. I loved it. I loved it so much. It has everything. It's gonna make you. There was even a part of this in this absurd movie that I started choking up for, like almost crying. The movie is it's amazing, and it fits so well with things like, Phantom of the Paradise, or even like the Beatles movie, Long Day's Night. Right? That's the name of that movie. It fits like it's between Phantom of the Paradise, Rock and Rule, if you've ever seen that movie, which is also one of my favorite movies, and Hard Day's Night, Long Day's Night, something like that. I'm not a big fan of the Beatles, keep that between us, but okay. It's a bizarre film. It's so much fun. It's so, every scene, you have no idea where it's going to take you. The fashion is incredible. Like the looks that they were serving, was so, like, it was so good. The music actually slaps, which I wasn't expecting the music to, but it actually really does. The movie is really hard to find. This version, I believe, is like a re-release, like a mastered version of the original. The original film bombed in Japan and was kind of quickly shelved by the producers and is now seeing a resurgence back in popular culture. The movie is amazing. And if you can somehow score a copy, you can probably find it online. If you can, please watch The Stardust Brothers. It is so good, especially for fans of Japanese culture, 70s Japanese culture, 80s Japanese culture, manga culture. Sidebar, the director of this film is the son of Osamu, oh my God, let me get this right. Tekuzu, right? The man who created Atomic Boy. It's his son that directs this film, and it's incredible. It's an incredible film. And I don't know why it bombed, because the film is a masterpiece, and I stand by that. Another movie that I got a chance to see was The Nightingale, which is Jennifer Kent's follow-up to The Babadook. Now, this film is a right turn from all the other films that I've just been talking about, because this film is intense. Yes, that's the word for it. So I'm not the biggest fan of rape revenge movies at all. I really don't like them. They're not really enjoyable for me. The line between depicting rape as entertainment is very, it's very shallow for me. Like, I can't l look at a movie that has rape in it and be like, well, that was entertaining. It's not, I don't get what I don't know what I'm supposed to get out of this movie. Am I supposed to be entertained by it? Because I don't find it entertaining. Am I supposed to be educated by it? It's very rare that you watch a rape revenge movie where you're like, wow, that was edifying. Like, what am I supposed to learn from this movie? That rapists should be killed? Like, spoiler alert, like, I'm already aware of that. So it doesn't really matter to me. As far as like watching it for entertainment, I can't get into it. I can't. This film, I purposefully went in not really knowing that much about it, wanting. I didn't do any research for any films that I saw during SIFF, because I really wanted to just be in the moment, and I just wanted to discover the film for the very first time. This movie, I would give a heavy, heavy trigger warning. Is graphic. It is a graphic film. It is a feel bad movie. It is not supposed to make you feel good. There are very few moments of levity that are happening in this movie, and it's a hard movie to watch. So I was really excited for this movie. because I'm such a huge fan of The Babadook and Jennifer Kent's style, you can definitely see that she has a upgrade in her directorial, what's the word that I want to use for this? Her becoming, discovering herself as a director, her style, the development of her style, the establishment of her style, you can definitely see it from The Babadook to The Nightingale. You can see the bump up that happens, the evolution of her style as a director. And I really applaud her because of the fact that she is still tackling very hard subject matters that are sort of everyday horrors that women face in their lives. And that is a really incredible, I really admire that. I really admire the fact that she is like, I'm going to cover like postpartum depression and anxiety and resenting your children and sexual assault and systemic violence. Now I have my image, my problems. Now I have my problems when it comes to this movie. And there are some problems, okay? And my issues with this movie can really be summed up in three words, which is white woman feminism. If you've seen the movie, you might already know what I'm talking about. I believe I'm still under embargo from going into length about this film or publishing any sort of long review because I believe it has a release date later on this summer. So I'm gonna check into that and see what I can say about this movie. But I got some critiques. Yeah, definitely. The Aborigine actors in this film were incredible, and the guy who is the main villain, who is kind of a like a heartthrob, he's been in like, I don't know, he's been in like, I think he was like in the Divergent movies, or maybe he was in, what's that movie where it's Jennifer Lawrence at The Hunger Games? He was in either one of those movies. To be fair, I have not seen either of those movies. I don't really know that much about them. I know that they're about, it's post-apocalyptic white kids, right? That's all I know about those movies. I saw that, and then one of the movies that I actually just saw. I watched it at home because I didn't have enough time to go see it. Was Detectives, which, if you enjoy stupid horror comedies, you'll probably really like it. I thoroughly did not. I did not like this movie. It didn't help the fact that the star of this movie is the bad guy from Detective Pikachu, who has a face like Eric Trump. So it's really, really hard to take him seriously. And like, as soon as I saw his face, I was like, nah, I'm not into this. But other people have said that they really like the movie, which I find interesting. I also went to go see the horror shorts section that they have at SIFF, which was called Dark Delicacies. I was really delighted with some of those films, particularly a movie called, man, I really should have written this down, a movie called Helsinki Mansplaining Massacre, I think is the name of this movie. I gotta look this movie. It was so good. It was so good. It's exactly what you think it would be. It's a girl who is stuck in a like The Hills Have Eyes, a Texas Chainsaw Massacre type situation, but instead of them being inbred cannibals, they're just men who are mansplaining everything to her. The movie is so good. It's a short. I'm gonna try to see if I can find where it is, if it's available online, so I can link that in the show notes, because the movie was mwah, chef's kiss. Mwah. Beautiful, gorgeous, loved it. Overall, SIFF was it was another great SIFF. I mean, like I said, I feel like there were less parties this year, and I don't exactly know if that's because I wasn't invited to any parties this year. Maybe as a sponsor, they were like, "Yes, please come to all of our parties," and then as press, they were like, "No." Don't come to any parties. We don't need you reporting on any of the things that have happened behind closed doors. I don't really know. I can't really say. I wish I was healthier. I wish I was feeling better for this SIF instead of being so just tired and struck down. But here's keeping my fingers crossed for next year's SIF that I'm going to be strong, healthy. I'll be drinking a lot of vitamin C and green juice and doing a lot of sit-ups. So overall, SIF was great. It was a great time. And yeah, I can't wait to come back again. So before we get started on the other movies, the major movies that I saw in theaters this week, I want to give an update about Nocturnal Emissions. So two things. One is the live show starts up in September. September. Ooh, what date is this start up again? September 12th. Yes, I know my own show. September 12th, the Northwest Film Forum in Seattle, Washington. We will be starting out with. Oh, I can't say the name of the movie that we're going to be starting out. We won't announce that until about July. And so in a couple, well, no, actually next month. Next month we'll be making the announcements about what films we'll be showing. And I'm really excited. I'm very excited about our lineup for this year. I'm also really excited about our guests that we'll be having and the performers that we'll be doing. So that's something to look forward to. I can't talk about what we're gonna do. I'm so excited. So if you're in the Seattle area, if you're in the Pacific Northwest, and you are craving some horror movies and some live performance, please stay tuned for that. Subscribe on our Twitter, NOCEMISS, and also our Facebook, Nocturnal Emissions Show. I've also got a YouTube page, which is also called Nocturnal Emissions. I'm pretty sure I'm the only goofball named Nocturnal Emissions on YouTube, but who knows? And as I've been sick, I haven't been able to record. Part of the sickness that happened to me this last week was that I lost my voice. And 90% of what I do is voice related. I couldn't record anything. I couldn't record the podcast. I couldn't do a YouTube episode. I was out. I could not do anything. So for this coming week, I'll be working on another episode, and please keep your fingers crossed that I will have that released by Friday. If not by Friday, I will definitely have that released by Sunday. So I'm really looking forward to releasing another episode and getting back on the internet because you know what they say, if it's not on the internet, it never happened. So if you're not on the internet, you are pretty much dead. You don't exist. So I'm gonna try to get back to doing that. And if you are subscribed to the YouTube channel, I am so sorry. If you were looking forward to new episodes, I'm really sorry that I have not been posting anything because the human body has failed me. This wretched human cage, this prison of flesh has failed me, and I've failed all of you, and I'm so sorry, but I'll be back this week. If I have to bleed, if I have to die, I'll be doing it. So, all right. Couple of movies that I saw this week are three very different movies. And maybe if you're already subscribed to my Facebook page, you've probably already seen some of my feelings about these films. But the three that I saw in the past week was Godzilla King of the Monsters, Brightburn, and X-Men Dark Phoenix. Let's talk about X-Men Dark Phoenix first. Let's just get it out of the way. Wow. What to say about this movie? My first foreplay. My first taste of comic books was the X-Men animated series. That came on when I was a little kid. I can't even really remember. It's probably like 6 or 7. And that was my, I was obsessed with that TV show. It was that and Power Rangers was my whole life. So watching those shows as a kid was really formative. It really made me into the kind of comic book fan, movie fan, superhero fan that I am today. So seeing the sort of slow decline, and it's been about 10 years, it's been over 10 years since the beginning, the first X-Men movie, and now, and to see the decline in quality, really, I can't even say the decline in quality because from the third movie, the movies were not very good. So really, they had one good one, which was X-Men 1, one okay one, which is X2, and then by X3, it's over, it's done. And they just kept releasing more and more, and they did this like kind of X-Men babies thing, which I was like, sure, fine, yeah, okay. But then they had this whole concept of taking it decade by decade, which didn't make any sense because we're gonna wait 10 years in between every single film. No, we're not, of course not. So this idea of taking it decade by decade didn't make any sense. And it was this weird sort of gimmick that didn't really work out very well. And I don't really know why they stuck to it. By this film, by Dark Phoenix, it feels almost like they're trying to get you to forget that there's these 10-year time jumps. The movie was directed by Simon Kinberg, who, oh man, this guy. I never really like to dunk on filmmakers unless they are problematic in some sort of way. And if you're not problematic, you're not racist, homophobic, transphobic, I don't really feel the need to dunk on you or to rag on you at all. If you're just not a very good filmmaker, that's not, I don't have anything, that's not a personal, like that doesn't hurt my feelings because it doesn't endanger anybody's lives. It doesn't put anybody at risk because of the fact that you're not a good filmmaker. It doesn't change my life because of the fact that you're not a good filmmaker. So I don't like to talk smack. I don't like to disrespect anybody based on the fact that they're not good filmmakers. I will completely come after you and dismantle your life if you are a problematic person, if you are a racist, a homophobe, a trans, oh, then it's open hunting season, okay? That's a whole different kind of bag. This man, though, Simon Kinberg was the writer on, he was the writer all the way up to, yeah, X-Men Last Stand, 2006. He wrote that. He wrote X-Men Days of Future Past, and he wrote the I keep calling it Fanfourstic. It is the Fantastic Four movie of 2015, which colloquially we all know as Fantastic Fourstic. He is not capable of making these films. He is not a good writer. He is not a good director. This is his first major film. He is not good at this. He is not good. Do you hear me when I tell you? This is not his bag, and this is a prime example of another white man in film failing upwards. He's failing up. He is not at the place where he needs to be, which is far away from these films. He just keeps getting more and more responsibility, and it's so frustrating. The movies that he has made are not good films. They're not written well. The logic that, and I'm like heated about this. I don't know why I care so much. I'm trying to make a point. The logic that anybody could have with seeing the Fantastic Four movie and being like, yeah, give him X-Men movies. I don't understand it. It's like a money laundering scheme. It's like they had to sink this money for tax evasion reasons. I don't really understand it at all because he's proven over many, many years, over almost a decade, about a decade, he's not capable of making good films. And it's not a debatable kind of a thing. Like, his films are not good. And to do this thing, which I absolutely hate, I think it's so lame whenever filmmakers are like, well, it's up to the fans to decide how they feel about this. It's not about the critics. It's about the fans. It's like, first of all, you can be both. You can be a fan and a critic, okay? Many critics that I know are also fans. Nobody wants a film to be more successful to write a glowing review about a film more so than a critic who is a fan, okay? The movies are... I mean, they're just, I can't even say they're like demonstrably not good by fans or by critics, but they are. I mean, like, The Fantastic Four is not a well-liked film. Days of Future Past is not a well-liked film. I mean, you'll find fans no matter where you look, but wow. Oh my goodness. So they gave him this movie, and I really wish that they had not. I really do wish that they hadn't. It was not good. In true Simon Kinberg style, Simon Kinberg style, it makes no sense. It's illogical. It's much like his other films. The plot line doesn't make any sense. The true tragedy of all of this is that the third act of this movie, and what was probably also the second act of this movie, has a plot line that parallels Captain Marvel. Which, if I was involved in this film and I went out with a team so that we could all go see a fun movie together, we all went to go check out Captain Marvel, I would have probably passed out. Because it is almost a beat-by-beat, like, reiteration of Captain Marvel. Like, it is really the same plot line. You have a young girl who has a hidden power that's been dampened by a man in her life in order to help her, quote unquote. She rediscovers this power. It makes her super, super powerful. She is overruled by her emotions, of which everybody around her, particularly this man that has had control over her, has told her that her emotions are dangerous and that they make her a danger to be around. There are these shape-shifting aliens that come from outer space that are like, we want that power because we lost our home and we need that power in order to get back, in order to make a new home or get back to our old home. And she defeats them using that power and harnessing her emotions. It's the same movie. It's the same movie. And I just can't help but to feel like this would not happen if Marvel had gotten back the X-Men sooner. Like, if Marvel, because now the Fox-Disney-Marvel merger is complete. Fox now is under Disney, which means that the Marvel, the MCU, can now make X-Men movies, right? It's super convoluted. I don't feel like explaining it. There are so many articles about this merger. Please consult somebody else who's more knowledgeable about it than me, because I don't know anything. So just an outsider who's been reading a lot of articles and listening to a lot of conversations. Anyway, all I know is that this means that Marvel can make X-Men movies. From what I've heard through the grapevine is that they have to wait 4 years for them to reboot it. And I am a patient person. I cannot wait. I am sure that Kevin Feige has a plan for how to envelop the X-Men into the next phase, which will probably be, I don't even know, phase five, phase six, something like that of the MCU. I can't wait. Because this is it's trash. The X-Men movies are bad. They are bad films, and I do not like them. they're bad. So there's that. That makes me so frustrated. But anyway, the movie is another kind of insulting take on this woman who has powers, this the hysterical woman trope. This idea of a woman who is so powerful that it makes her hysterical. The root of the word hysterics, which is rooted in the word hyster, which is, I can't remember exactly what part of a female's anatomy it is, but it's in the, it's like for your, it's like your reproductive organs. Y'all, I'm still recovering from sickness, so please bear with me. Anyway, hysterical is a very sexist term that has been used for a very long time in order to describe a woman who is just, she's just emotional. She has too much emotions. And it's being used in the same kind of a way. It's supposed to be this great metaphor about like how strong she is, but really it just comes out as being like, here's this woman who is so emotional and irrational that she can't even handle her own powers, but this man around her can. And even though in the movie you're supposed to see like, oh, well, actually, no, that's not very good. Like, spoiler alert, I mean, if you know the Dark Phoenix saga, which has been around for like 40 years, she explodes at the end of this. So, I mean, it's not really like it's that strong of a message. And so much of this movie is supposed to be focusing on Jean and how she, what she's going through. And it doesn't. It doesn't focus on her hardly ever. We go from focusing on Charles to focusing on Magneto to focusing on these aliens to focusing back on Charles again. Like, it really doesn't do her any good. It doesn't do her justice, and it's a shame because this is the second iteration of this plotline. We've already had in X3... we've already had a Dark Phoenix saga. They had two chances to get this right, and they failed both times. Both of these movies are the worst movies. I don't understand it. I don't know what's going on in these offices. Who's in charge? Who's in charge? I am so glad that they don't get to have these movies and this property anymore because they don't know what to do with it, clearly. The next movie after this, and then that is the final Fox X-Men saga, the New Mutants movie, which is slated for 2020, I believe. This movie has also had the same set of problems that the Dark Phoenix had, which is a series of reshoots that they've had to do over and over again in order to fix some of the problems. It's very common. Most films will have to do some sort of reshoots in order for the film to, you know, you always watch something, you're always editing something, and then you're like, ah, that's not very good, or the continuity for that doesn't match up with this. And so reshoots happen all the time. The problem is the number of reshoots and how late in the game they've been doing reshoots. That's a bad sign. And the fact that the movie's been delayed. I thought the movie was supposed to be coming out this year, or maybe, when was this movie supposed to, I thought it was supposed to come out this year. It's been pushed back another year, which is odd. It's odd, but, you know, that remains to be seen. I will keep my head open for it, even though I don't really have high hopes. So after the New Mutants, this will be the end of the Fox X-Men movies, and couldn't come any sooner for me. Another movie that I watched that was substantially better than Dark Phoenix was Godzilla, but also had the same issue for me. Okay, Godzilla, you can't go wrong as long as Godzilla's in the movie. So this was Godzilla, King of the Monsters. I am of the camp of people that believes that Godzilla is not binary, but that's just me. That's neither here nor there. We can talk about that at a different time. I think Godzilla is a hard femme, and that's me. But Godzilla, King of the Monsters, which had Mothra, Rodan, and King Ghidorah, which is just gorgeous. If you are like me and you love a kaiju, you love a big boy, you love a big monster, This movie was all the big monsters you could handle and more. There were some big monsters where I was like, who are you? I don't know who you are. Get out of here. I don't like you. Some of the other, what do they call them? Mufons or something like that? Mutons? Whatever they call them. I don't watch these movies for the plot. I watch these movies for the big boy, aka Godzilla. The movie was big and loud. There was a lot of punching. Boston got Millie Rocked, which I think is hilarious. So that happened. Another issue that shares the issues that I have with X-Men is that it was supposed to be a story about Millie Bobby Brown. At least from the trailer, it looked like it was Millie Bobby Brown's story, but it focused so much on her dad, which I thought was so odd that you just have this like stressed out middle-aged father who is the source of so much of the plot in this movie. His whole character arc is that he hates Godzilla because Godzilla contributed to the death of his son, but by the end of the movie, he's like, I guess you're okay, Godzilla. Like, it's so bizarre. And they focus so much on him, and I don't understand why. From the trailer, it really looked like it was going to be starring Millie Bobby Brown, and it doesn't really. It really is about her dad, which is a shame. I think that having a story about this young girl who gets to know these monsters and uses her abilities to help, it would have been more interesting. And it also would have been more interesting had we gone deeper into the relationship between her and her mother. That would have been much more interesting than this guy who's like on this hunt to find his family, who I guess I could say why. Is it much of a spoiler? They get kidnapped to help set all the monsters free. And so the dad is trying to find the mom and the daughter because they've been kidnapped by like eco terrorists who are like, we just want to destroy the entire earth because it's what she wants. Like, it's what she deserves. She deserves to just be like reborn and just have like all the big kaiju rule over it, which like I don't disagree with. I don't disagree with that. The earth is a mess right now, okay? So that was really strange for me. I didn't, that was a big issue. I mean, yeah, I did not like that. I just really thought that it was strange, and it felt much like in the X-Men movies. It felt like the only reason that happened was because of the fact that they can't write women. It didn't feel like it was something that was like a conscious decision. It just feels like ineptitude. It felt like, well, I don't really know what a teenage girl would be going through, so I'm just gonna focus on this middle-aged white dude because the director and the writers are also middle-aged dudes. So I don't know. And I haven't seen a single review of anybody who has that take about this movie, which means that yet again, I'm alone on my feelings, which is not uncommon. Another movie that I liked that is I feel like I'm alone on is Brightburn. I loved it. Like, I really loved this movie. This movie has a lot of drama behind it. So it's produced by the Gunn family, which is, I don't know why I feel like I feel so tickled whenever I say that. I don't know why I'm so amused by the Gunn family. But there's a whole bunch of Gunns out there. The one that we know the most is obviously James Gunn. And probably his brother Sean, who is in most of his stuff. James Gunn was fired from Guardians of the Galaxy. When was that? Last year, sometime. And he, because a bunch of right-wing conservative trolls were like, well, if you're gonna get a bunch of racist, sexist right-wingers fired from their jobs, then we can find somebody on the left and get them fired for their job. And Disney fell for it, which is clownery and buffoonery on Disney's part. But they hired him back. not before he produced this film and also got signed by DC to do the next Suicide Squad movie, of which I'm very shocked by because I didn't know anybody wanted another Suicide Squad movie. I didn't know that that was an option, but apparently it is, and apparently James Gunn is going to do it, which is great because if anybody can pull off that movie, I mean, James Gunn should have been hired for that movie from the get-go. So this movie, it feels kind of like an FU to superhero culture. The whole premise of the movie is a baby boy crash lands to Earth. He's got superpowers. Stop me if you've heard this one before. His parents live on a farm. They're like a little cute ma and pa set. They discover that their baby boy has superpowers and they're trying to help this boy with his discovery, you know, the life change that he's going through as a young man. He is like a complete asshole. He's a complete dick. This kid is a nightmare. He's just like every other like 12-year-old boy that I have ever, not even 12-year-old boy. He's like every dude that I have, like every incel that has ever fought with me on the internet. He's just angry and entitled and bitter and rageful. And this movie scared me because I know so many men like that. And I had just read this article about, there's so many of these like incel articles that are coming out. There was this one about the, I cannot remember the name of the college, but he shot up a yoga studio. This was a couple of years ago. And he was an incel and he was bitter and angry and rageful, just like this kid. And I was reading this article about how incels are getting plastic surgery and the way that they talk about women is so revolting. And it's so like, they're just hateful, disgusting people. So watching this movie, I was like, God, if one of them got superpowers, we would be done for. We would be done for. And so the movie really struck close to home for me. The kid is awful. It really reminds me of like a movie like Rosemary's Baby or The Bad Seed or The Good Son. And what was the other one? Or The Omen. Yeah. Where I was like, okay, evil white kid, here we go. Evil white kid causing mayhem and chaos while their poor mother is like, sweetheart, I love you. Please stop killing people. So I thought it was great. I thought it was a really scary movie, but scary in a different kind of a way. Scary in a way that we didn't really talk about. I think for me, this movie was kind of the first incel horror that I've ever seen. And I wish that there was more incel horror because that's really what we're going through right now. So I would highly recommend seeing Brightburn. It feels like a little indie horror movie, horror action movie. I don't even know what you call it. Horror superhero movie. It's a really unique film. Some of the reviews for this movie was just kind of like, I don't know what this is. I don't know how to categorize this. The movie feels, I read this one review and this guy was like, it's a hateful, dark, nihilistic. I was like, whoa, I didn't feel that way at all. I mean, it's not a positive movie. It's not an upbeat movie. The kid, if you've ever seen The Omen or Rosemary's Baby, you know that those movies don't really have happy endings. Like, the kid goes on, and it's kind of a bummer, but, you know. So I wouldn't really consider those movies to be nihilistic because of the fact that Damien doesn't die in the end. But regardless, I got a real kick out of Brightburn, and they tease at the end of this movie they tease like a cinematic universe, a Brightburn cinematic universe, which intrigues me. Intrigues me to no end. And if they do it, sign me up. Sign me up. All right. So that's kind of all that I have in me right now. Your girl is gonna go chug some just straight up cold medicine. I'm just gonna chug hot soup directly. I'm just gonna put chicken noodle soup in a neti pot and just strain it straight through my body. But thank you so much for listening to tonight's episode, and I will make a full recovery. I'm gonna Simone Biles this, and I'm gonna come out on that landing with tens across the board, be healthy, full of health, too much health, a scarily high amount of health, and be back next time for another episode. So stay well, stay hydrated, moisturize, wash your legs, and I will see you again. Bye.